You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is your host, Sophia. Today, I am going to bring on a guest. I hope we can reach him. We have arranged to have him on the air, but he has a very interesting website. He has quite a diverse background also in this activism field. His current website is wagthedog2008.com. And I met Jim, his name is Jim Condit, Jr., no less. I met Jim because I had heard that he was running ads. He runs for Congress every year and takes advantage of an apparent requirement that as a congressional runner, I suppose, candidate, you are allowed to get airtime on radio stations at the lowest available rate, and you can run ads for your campaign. And Jim's ads are notorious, I think is the right word, because they touch on many issues, the whole barrel of rabbit hole issues. And he has three ads that he's running this year. You can listen to them or watch them. There's actually a video that includes the ads on wagthedog2008.com. And you will see that this is a very clever sort of plan. I would call Jim a kind of stuntman in politics because he is very fearless, very imaginative, and very relaxed about this. So I'm going to see if we have him on the air. Jim, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Sophia. Sorry, I missed the first ring. So.
Yes, I'm sure. You were running around doing more of your stunts. I called you a stuntman. I hope you don't take offense to that.
No, I'm very happy to be called that.
Well, you know,
it's the first time anyone ever called me that. It would just be a mental stuntman, unfortunately, not a physical stuntman, although I'd like to be one of those, too, but it didn't happen, so.
Well, you know, the stuntman in the movies does the things that no one else can do, and I imagine stuntmen are absolutely fearless. I think I actually met a stuntman once. They usually have broken bodies, a very kind of odd personality, but we're talking, as you said, about a mental stuntman. So we're coming up on our break in a minute, but I've told the audience about your website, wagthedog2008.com. Maybe we can start out with your telling us the meaning of wag the dog.
Yes. That would be fine.
All right.
You said, are we having a break now or not?
When you hear the break, you will be cut off. You will be forced into silence.
Right. Wag the Dog was the movie that came out in 1998. Well,
there we go. So we'll have to hear more about this correlation between the movie and the website after our break. Thank you.
Okay, yeah.
You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and my guest today is Jim Condit, Jr. Jim, I assume I have to say Jr. every time I say your name, right?
Well, I would appreciate it because my dad is 78 years old. He's still an active attorney, and he, not that he disavows any knowledge of my actions, but if I say something that somebody wants to sue me over, I don't want him suing my dad, okay?
And, right.
And we have been sued 20 years. In 1981, I was sued for publishing the statement, for publishing the record of a candidate and drawing a conclusion. And just to embarrass us, the local, party man judge ruled that we had violated freedom of speech. And even the liberal paper in town did an editorial saying this would be the end of freedom of speech. Well, as soon as the election was over, the Ohio Supreme Court overturned it, but made clear as they did it that there were to be no suits for damages. You know, they were going to, in other words, it was just a stunt to embarrass our little political movement called Cincinnatus Party at that time after the old Roman farmer who saved Rome, if you remember. Then he went back to his farm. They said, "We'll make you king." The Romans did after he led the army against the barbarians. And he said, "No, I'm just going to go back and be a farmer." So we thought that was a good analogy for many people in the movement trying to stop this New World Order and trying to keep people strong and free. So our party was called Cincinnatus Party in Cincinnati. But we, and this is a universal lesson, we were not written into the play. We had walked on the stage locally in Cincinnati. We were not written in the play, and all kinds of forces came forth, even though those groups we were trying to help to strangle us and to attack us. I was 26 years old at the time. So, yeah, but the point is that you do sometimes get sued, and we always have won. However, and I haven't been sued since the 80s, but the judges are so crooked now, they're so bold, that they very well may sue me before a judge, and they just will let it hold. The problem for them is this: since I know how crooked these judges are, how many of them need to be put on trial and jailed for life or hung for what they're doing to the United States, I don't own anything. So unless they reinstitute debtor's prison, I remember one fellow who was fighting a good fight, and they came out with a decision that he owed a certain bad organization like $40 million, okay? So he was about 70 at the time, and he had 8 kids. He walked out of the court, and the press says, "What are you going to do about the $40 million? He says, "What do they want, cash or check?" He was just joking. But this is how, so anyway, that's why I own nothing. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, we were going to hear an explanation for the website name, wagthedog2008.com.
Right. That's the 1997 movie, Wag the Dog, which came out, and it is a tremendous confession of how Hollywood and Washington types work together to deceive the people and move the country in the direction they want. But it's also a funny comedy. Robert De Niro is the fix-it man for the president. Dustin Hoffman plays the Hollywood producer who they approach to get him to produce some fake footage so they can stall the election. I keep meaning to write a commentary on this, and I want to mention that after I tell what Wag the Dog means. At the beginning of the movie, it has just text, and it says, if the dog is smarter than the tail, then it wags the tail, but if the tail is smarter than the dog, then it wags the dog, something to that effect. And the idea was that these Hollywood slicksters with the Washington politicians wag the public on the way they do the publicity and what they cover and what they don't. And that was the idea of the, of course, we have Wag the Dog going on in this country, where the organized Jewish lobby and several other coalitions with them, small group through the media, is wagging the country. In other words, this is, we can get into that further in the interview. So that's the meaning of Wag the Dog. And Wag the Dog 2008 was available. And you also can get to my website by Condit 2008. But to hear the name Condit, not everyone knows how to spell it, So. So Wag the Dog 2008 is also a little bit fun. It's a fun name, so that's why we're using it. And it gets the point across, because we are experiencing tremendous tail wagging the dog in these banksters looting the country as they're doing right now. They're really wagging the country, this small group of financiers and bank international banksters. So that was the meaning of the of why we took the name.
Yeah, it's also an easy name to remember, which is a very good thing to do when you're putting together a URL. Always pick what people can remember,
yes,
and especially what they can spell. And these are three easy words, wag, yes, the dog. Now, your name, Condit, a lot of people mispronounce that or
yes,
they catch it wrong. They believe that you are Jim Conduit.
Oh, yeah. Or Condon or something like that.
No. Conduit is meaningful because you actually are a channel now. And I'm not speaking completely metaphysically, but you are a conduit different kinds of revelations, especially on the radio. When you run these ads, tell us the nature of the ads. Tell us how you came about doing this. And if you're really serious, do you really run for Congress, or do you just make yourself available in that sort of category so that you can take advantage of this advertising?
Well, I mean, naturally, we would like to win, but I mean, I always tell my supporters, I'm in the congressional race in the 2nd District of Ohio. The incumbent is Jean Schmidt, and she was the woman on the floor of Congress who when John Murtha said that Iraq was not working and the soldiers weren't being treated right and we needed to get out, she called John Murtha, who was a Marine. She said, real Americans don't cut and run on the floor of the Congress. Many people remember that. And then the House broke into a, very rarely for the Congress, like a British parliament, they broke into shouts and, oh, you heard all kinds of ruckus because it's it's like against the rules for them to attack each other on the floor of the Congress. But Jean Schmidt is, you know, just like most of the congressmen, not ready for prime time. She didn't even know she was breaking the rules, but she's the incumbent. And I tell people, and I tell my people that support the campaign, I say, look, if I told you, hey, send in $15 or $100, and I might win, I would be kidding them. I would be, in effect, deceiving them because, barring a miracle, we have one, I'm outspent $1 million to usually about $15,000. Number two, we wish we could raise. I mean, you know, with this videos I put on the internet, I always hoped that it would become viral and would get, 10,000 people to donate $20 or something and would be able to really make a much bigger impact. But so first of all, that's number one. Number two, the media either completely ignores me or attacks me if they have to mention me when the radio ads are on. And number three, the vote count is completely done in secret by HART systems here. If there's some, I don't believe they would let anyone like me be elected at this point, even if I did win. So I don't tell people that we are just on the edge of winning. But I do tell them that no matter who likes it or not, thanks to the reasonable access law, we can put ads on the air that will be heard by over 1 million people in a two-week period. It's a pretty good saturation around the clock on WLW and WKRC, sometimes a few other stations. And we will reach $150,000 at a shot. Each ad that runs in drive time reaches 150 to 200,000. Now they're even saying their audience is as big as 250,000 sometimes.
So 150,000 people you can reach on with each ad.
Well, in drive time. Naturally, yes. As you get into mid-morning and mid-afternoon and late at night, it's less. But at night, we can hit 38 states for $25 an ad. In other words, the WLW here is the trucking network, okay? It caters to truckers, and their signal, like WLS in Chicago or probably a station, WABC or whatever it's called in New York City, they have a tremendous reach. They go into 38 states and half of Canada, and for $25 at night, I don't know if it might be $35 this year, I don't know if they raise the prices, we are hitting all those truckers and all those people at night, and it caters to truckers, but a lot of other people listen. And my feeling on night owls is while there's many, many less people listening, night owls who are listening will tend to spread around information to other people. And here's a key, too, because I've been begging 60 or 70 people or any, you know, 5 people, 10 people in different cities. What we need is not just one person in Cincinnati, Ohio doing this. We need a congressional candidate on in 70 cities who will put these types of ads on, not necessarily exactly what I do and exactly from the angle, because there's so many issues or so many angles people can hit from, you know. But we need 60 or 70 people in all the major media markets running these, where we're hitting more like 40 to 50 million people some of the time rather than just 150 to 300,000 repeatedly. But we do reach over 1 million, you know, by any logical analysis in the two-week campaign. They will at least hear one ad. And here's the key, though. If let's say someone's out there thinking, well, maybe I'll do this, you either get on the ballot or you even just sign a write-in thing, a write-in paper and pay $100 or so, you're in the race. And now the reasonable access law, which was passed by Congress in the 70s, applies to you. And what it says that the FCC-licensed stations, the radio and TV stations, which is all the big ones, all the local NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, and all their big radios, all the radio stations on AM or FM, they must carry your ads without censorship and without alteration. They must carry them in the shows you say. Like, you can't say, I want it to run at 1:22, but you can say, I want it to PM, but you can say, I want it to run on the Rush Limbaugh show. They must run it. And in the last 60 days before the election, they must give you the lowest rate that they charge any business any time in the year. And if they alter your ads or keep them off the air, it says in the law, the candidate can file to own the license of the station. That's how serious they were when they passed this. That's never happened, even though it should have happened 2 or 3 times. But it's never happened that a station was cost their license and given to the candidate. But that, you see, this is one of the strongest laws. Furthermore, in 1992, they tried to keep the ads of a man named Dan Becker in Georgia off the air, okay? He went ahead, and these were ads on abortion. I hear the music.
Yes, you're going to have to take a rest now.
Okay.
We'll be back after our break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and my guest today is Jim Condit, Jr. He is the most creative congressional candidate, I would say, that I've heard of in terms of defining for himself a smaller arena in which to work and really making the most of what's available. I believe I'm going to restate this law, will you say it for us again so that it can be drilled into my brain?
Yes, it's the Reasonable Access Law. And
Reasonable Access Law.
And it was passed in 1970s by Congress. And I was just saying that in 1992, there was a third-party candidate named Dan Becker. I believe he was third-party. He was a primary candidate that lost the primary. And he put on pro-life ads or anti-abortion ads showing aborted fetuses and different. And the station said, look, these are so offensive, we're going to put them between midnight and 6. That's the only time we're going to run them. Now, that was in absolutely complete violation of the Reasonable Access Law. So he sued, and this is why that station should have had their license taken away, and they never did. But he sued in 1992. 350, if my memory serves right, TV and radio stations came. It was called Becker against the FCC. And the 350 television and radio stations came in on the side of the FCC against Becker. But for some reason, this is a victory for our side, the appeals court in the Washington, D.C. area, right below the Supreme Court, gave a resounding victory to Becker in 1996, and it completely repudiated the station, said they cannot do this, you have to run the ads, blah, blah. So not only do we have the Congressional Act, but we have this court decision, which makes it in a land where the rule of law was working, an ironclad decision. And I have to say, even though I believe the FCC does not in any way like my ads, they have backed me up to run them here in the Midwest. We might get into a little nuance that happened in Chicago in 2006 when I ran an ad that was a very mainstream ad called Arrest Chertoff, okay? And the ad began, Michael Chertoff is an enemy of America. That was the first line, and it got worse from there. So there was something about that that we could comment on. But they have backed me in my city and sphere of influence. So who knows what will happen this year. But it's still they have to just break the law, because we not only have the law, we have this 1996 court decision. And I assume that the FCC did not appeal it because they weren't completely sure of what the Supreme Court would do. And if they had lost at the Supreme Court, that would be, like a disaster, because then they may still be planning to bring this up if they can find a case and start it moving through the court system. However, so few people on our side are using it that since I have not started a mass movement with my ads here in the Midwest, they probably are thinking, well, let's just not call attention to it,
Right. So if people, the thing about this is you have to be bold, because your name is going out there along with your message, your very
right.
controversial message, which maybe a lot of people would think of as crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you present a message that's extremely controversial, that's extremely creative even. People are herd animals, they're sheep, and that's not what they would ever do.
Mm-hmm.
So now your name is being broadcast all over. You tell me you come from a very large family, and that gives you some protection, right?
Well, I think that my dad is well-respected as a lawyer, and I got 10 brothers and sisters and 53 nieces and nephews, 6 kids. And between us all, and a bit of the family is outgoing, so we know probably 10 to 20,000 people in the Cincinnati area. And let me tell you, from what I hear, people are not mad at my aunts. There's many people who are, you know, naturally the Jewish community has a faction that throws a tissy fit. But the average person that I've heard of people running into, because if it was me, they might just be being nice to me. But they are not mad at these ads. Some of them just wonder if they're true. Others are saying, finally, something's getting out there against this cabal that's hijacking humanity, you know, over the radio stations. Because we put the ads right in the middle of Rush Limbaugh, right in the middle of, you know, locally, right in the middle of Sean Hannity and the other big stations. We could try so people, they can go see. Well, the best thing is probably if they go see the ads, although in the past radio shows I've sometimes played one over the air and it's come out, you know, so you could hear it okay. But the thing I wanted to finish up on this reasonable access law, though, when you're using it, the thing that makes it really effective is that you can put a website in the ad. And if it wasn't for that, I would not be as excited about the strategy, because to just say something, people are driving, and the first thing I tell people, for instance, I've hit the Constitution Party has run ads, and I've seen other ads by other people trying to get a good message out. And soft may not be the right word. They're too uncontroversial. They're not controversial. If you have $1 billion, like Coke and Pepsi and this type of company, then go ahead. You can run thousands of ads, and you can start out real soft and build your image and all that thing. When you only have $15,000 to $100,000 in a campaign, you better break the people who are driving to work out of their trance and driving home from work. They're in a trance while they're driving. You better break them out of your trance or they're not even going to hear your ad.
That's right. Okay, we have a short break, Jim. We will be back on the other side.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to republicbroadcasting.org. Expansion, the show with Sophia, your host, the RBN Network. My guest is Jim Condit Jr., who has learned how to bring drivers out of their nightly trance by running these very daring radio ads in his capacity as a congressional candidate. Jim, you are absolutely right. People are in a trance when they drive, and this is something that I think they would find rather memorable, maybe something to think about.
Well, I think that is the case, and that's why the stations have often apologized for running them. The disc jockeys will say, you know, please don't call in, we have to run these ads, this type of thing. Yet, except for that, they never, ever take a call on any of my ads. Even though the man in Chicago, his name was Jack Kelly, manager of the station, said, called me after the ad started running. He said, "Mr. Condit, we are getting more calls in pro and con than anything that we've ever run. We cannot hardly, you know, we want to get, I'll tell you honestly, we have a team of lawyers working on how to get these ads off the air because we've got to get back to running the station again." Yet not one call was allowed on because I had some people up in Chicago monitoring the station. Not one call, it's a talk station, not one call was on to comment pro or against or con of the ads. And that's the same that happens here in WLW and WKRC. So there has to be a directive down that they're not to take any calls on this subject, but they don't admit it. They don't admit that. But so at any rate, the thing I wanted to say, though, is that website, once you break their trance, that website is is important to give, so that, and hopefully a memorable one, so they then go there. And so, for instance, we have websites of websites you should know about is one of the links on our homepage, and we've got about 20 important websites there. Yours is one of them, 911weknow.com, your second in the list, and with a little commentary on each one. And that is so that hopefully, we're hoping that if, you know, 2 or 3% of these people, they go in and they get, it opens up a whole new world of information to them. And this is what I'm not clear on, why more of the people who want to get something done don't see the value of this strategy. If they don't want to support me, I don't see why they don't, more people don't do it themselves. Because how are we going to get more people out there to know about RBN Radio, for instance, and your show Faster, or about any number of things, about what's happening with the North American Union, what's happening with chemtrails, whatever it might be? How are you going to get more people to know that if you don't get them realizing that there's a whole body of information that they're not getting from Sean Hannity, CBS, NBC, ABC, and that type of thing?
Well, sure. First of all, everything, people don't even know that you can do this.
Yes.
I know I'm starting to start my sentences three different times. I once knew had a friend who used to do that, and I used to yell at him.
I do it myself.
And say, begin your sentence once and finish it. Don't start it three different times. But it's very, I find myself very eager to express this as accurately as possible. And I don't think, Jim, people know that there's this option available.
No.
I'm going to tell you what you should do, of course. Millions of people have problems. You should have conference calls to explain to people how to do this. You should, I mean, seminars, a little CD, a little video or something.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone knows they can do this.
Yeah, these haven't caught on yet, but I'm holding, and it says right on our website, I'm holding nightly conference calls at 9 p.m. and midnight for the West Coast people, you know, the western part of the country people. And I would be glad to, and we're going to continue at least some a week after this election day, precisely for this reason, to tell people about this and the strategy and other things as well. But, yeah, this is something we need. This is a 10-minute lesson, the reasonable access law, as is the precinct strategy, as is many other things. And we need, you know, a few hundred thousand Americans at least to hear these 10-minute lessons.
So let's say I were interested in doing this. First of all, I'd have to know about it. Second of all, I'd have to know the parameters, and I'd have to agree on some level to be, quote-unquote, running for Congress.
Right. You're actually in the race. I mean, you know, whether you get on the ballot, which I've done that a lot of times, and what you do there is you either you get the signatures. It's usually about, there's a formula, like it's it's 2% or something like that of the votes cast in the last congressional election. There's some formula, and it usually comes out to 2,000 or 3,000 signatures in my area. Or you can just go down and sign a piece of paper and pay $85 in Ohio, and you're now a write-in candidate. Well, write-in candidates at one time, write-in candidates would win certain elections. There was a Senate race in, I'm going to say, the early 60s, maybe it was the late 50s. There was a Senate race that I think it was I'm not sure who it was right now, but it was in Mississippi or Alabama, where a write-in Senate candidate won. And there's a bunch of local races in this century where people have run and won as write-in candidates. So write-in is not to be despised as it is thought of by the major media. So that's an option too, and that's okay because you still qualify for the. Now, in the old days, and even when I was growing up, when my dad was, we would pass out literature for some candidates. He was a lawyer and knew some of the judges and so forth. And there were more good judges in those days. And we would pass this literature. But right now, for the resources I have, I'm not going to do a bunch of busy work. I tell people, don't go to the tea parties and click cups with the party leaders. Don't waste your time, unless you got a lot of energy and time, putting up signs and passing out literature door to door. A person who comes around and drops literature on your door these days, if it's not backed up by media, is thought of as a Mooney, LaRouche-type kook. You know, in other words, the idea is, hey, if you were so good, why aren't you on the media? I mean, that's the mentality of Americans, whether we like it or not. And so I can, in 1 minute, with about 350 or 400 bucks on WLW, hit 150,000 people at least at drive time, more than I could meet if I spent the last month 8-10 hours a day walking around the doors. And these days, people are not so happy to see everybody come to their door, where they are comfortable hearing about things through their TV and radio. I'm not saying this is ideal, but anybody that says this is not the way it is just out of touch with reality.
Yeah, that's very true. And so then you have to create the ad, though. So what does that take? You've got to write it. You've got to know how to write a 60 or, is it 60 seconds?
60. I always use 60 seconds because here's another little hint. 60-second ad will cost, a 30-second ad will cost 80% of what a 60-second ad costs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So why pay, $80 for a 30-second ad when I can pay $100 for a 60-second ad? I get twice as much information. And now all of the professionals say 30-second ads only. My reaction to that is they're trying to fool the people with image. I mean, in many cases, not all, but if you have a good hard-hitting 60-second ad, then you can keep people's attention, except for the people that really have some kind of attention deficit problem, in generally speaking, you know. So I always do 60s, and I write an ad, and then you have to keep paring it down. And I'll tell you another hint that might be of use if anybody's thinking of doing this. If you go on Microsoft Word and do 14-point for Arial text, okay, 14-point in the Arial font, I should say, then by the time you get to 13 lines, okay, when you've got 13 lines, that will be 60 seconds. So 14-point inch margins on each side, and by the time you get to about 13 lines or 13 in a few words or a little less than that, that will be about 60 seconds, and then you just got to read it. But it will sometimes take me 2 or 3 hours to write a one-minute ad because of the fact that you start out, oh, my gosh, that's a minute and 20 seconds. Well, you got to start cutting out words, rearranging words. Try not to lose your meaning. Now, I have queued up, Sophia, if you want to try it, I have queued up Radio Ad 3, which we're calling $7 a gallon gas, even though that isn't mentioned in the ad. And in the past, I've done this with Mike Piper and some of the other hosts at RBN, and it's worked. Do you want to try to play an ad so people?
Yes, we have. We're in a long segment now.
What I will do, though, is I'm going to play a few seconds of it, and then make sure you can hear it, okay? Without it distorting, because if it's distorting, it'll just be annoying to listen to it for 60 seconds. So let's see if you can hear this. Here we go. At $7 a gallon. The USA has enough gas for hundreds of years. Lindsay Williams was the chaplain. Now, can you hear that or not?
Yes, that works just fine. So let's play your one-minute ad. Now, this is an ad that you're going to be running currently if you get enough donations.
Yeah, well, we already have a little over 3,000 we hit today. We need really 15,000. I'll go into that in a minute. And I'm about to approach some of our bigger donors from past years because people are so busy, I don't even know who's noticed yet that we're doing this because I haven't got in touch with him personally. That's what I have to do. But here we go. You know, this ad will run at least sometimes. And here we go. Okay, here we are. .com, paid for by Jim Condon Jr. Okay, I'm sorry. This is going
on YouTube.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I went back a little too far, so it'll just queue up here in a minute. But what I was going to say, $15,000 will get us 2 weeks of pretty saturation advertising in the Midwest. The parameters I said, 90-mile radius by day, 38 states by night. And it's going a lot slower. I think people want to demoralize if the Ron Paul thing. They think nothing can work, and, you know, at least now they're kind of demoralized. Plus, oh, here we go.
$7 a gallon. The USA has enough gas for hundreds of years. Lindsay Williams was the chaplain on the Alaskan pipeline in 1977 when it was shut down by the neocon Jewish crime syndicate through the Carter administration. These traitors wanted us to think we needed oil from the Mideast so they could trick us into fighting the Arab world for Israel. The neocon Jewish syndicate controlled ABC, CBS, and NBC in 1977 and fed America the lie that the pipeline was shut down to save the caribou. It is urgent you watch Lindsay Williams' YouTube video, The Energy Non-Crisis. He tells you what happened, and I'm telling you who is behind gouging you at the gas pump every day. The Israel Lobby, a book by professors Walt of Harvard and Mearsheimer of Chicago, proves the organized Jewish lobby controls the U.S. Congress. See wagthedog2008.com. That's wagthedog2008.com, paid for by Jim Conda Jr. for Congress.
Okay, I hope that came over without distortion.
No, that was fine.
Good.
Some of the little things that you have in it make it sound very professional, and then, of course, you it isn't perfect. It
no.
was one little lurch.
I
right?
actually, you mean where I kind of skipped over my word there?
Yes.
Although I sometimes leave those in so people realize I'm a normal person and not a professional announcer, as long as I get within the 60 seconds. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but I felt that a little bit of imperfection may carry more credibility than absolutely total professionalism, but that's just the way I've always done it.
So your current ad, well, this one seemed to hit hard on the Jewish lobby.
Yeah.
Are all of them like that?
All three of them are, and I'll tell you the reason why. I believe we are, first of all, if everyone would talk about this in the public life in the proportion it deserved to be talked about, I might not hit it so hard. It's uncomfortable to hit this issue because Americans are brainwashed to believe that criticism of these top neocon Trotskyite, what I call the neocon Jewish crime syndicate, you're anti-Semitic or you hate Jewish people or you're against all Jewish people. Now, of course, if you attack the Islamofascist, you can call the nuke. And Michael Savage, the talk show host on 300 stations in the evening, has called many times for the nuking of an Arab city because of the so-called Islamofascist. And no problem there. And Americans don't say, oh, he's a hater or anything. And, of course, if someone talks about the mafia, which was, at least in the front people, was Sicilian-Italian, which I'm one-fourth Italian. Two of my great-grandparents were from Sicily. They came from the U.S. and met in the U.S., but they both started out from Sicily back in around 1900. No one says, well, if you were against the Sicilian mafia, you're anti-Italian. But the brainwashing due to the control by this neocon Jewish, Trotskyite Jewish group and Rothschild bankers for all last century, the brainwashing is so great that if you mention the word Jewish in a negative context, then you immediately the Pavlovian dog response, as you would say, kicks in on so many Americans. But one of the reasons I do this is to make this a discussable subject so that it breaks the trance, again, it breaks the hypnotism that people are in, and they, for the first time, think, well, maybe there is another, more information or another side to this thing. So right now, I am of the firm belief that this while there is the Rockefeller and the Bilderbergers and the George Bush and the Bill Clinton side of the ruling elite, or as the Birch Society calls it, the conspiracy. Yes, that is there. But I believe that the negative spiritual energy and the brains and really the spiritual energy behind this New World Order tyranny movement comes primarily from the Zionist Jewish side of things. I don't like to use the word Zionist in commercials, though, even though many people in the Patriot Movement have almost insisted I do so, for the simple reason that the average person does not understand the word Zionist. I don't care what anybody says. They do not understand it. They don't know who to look for. I'm honestly, what I want people to start doing is to look at the top of our government for the Jewish people that are there. They are the criminals. The good Jewish people were kept out. They've been kept out of this power structure, just like good Catholics are now kept out of anything of influence in the structures of the Catholic Church, and good Baptists and Protestants are not allowed anywhere in Pat Robertson's organization or Jerry Falwell's organization. So I want the people to know we are looking for Alan Greenspan, Paul Wolfowitz, Charles Schumer. These people need to be arrested, put on trial. People got to know who we're looking for. And yes, it's a Zionist. Yes, it is. But people do not know what Zionist means. Number two, in tens of thousands of Catholic and Protestant churches every Sunday, they're hearing the word Zion as a favorable word, and especially in the occupied Catholic churches by this counterfeit church, as I call it. They've picked the readings at the beginning of the so-called Mass. They pick the readings that mentions Zion, 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 land of Zion, the promised land of Zion. They've done that up for a reason. This was never the case when I was a kid. And so the Zion also has a happy ring in people's ears. In the Old Testament, it was a good word. And of course, these Zionists today are counterfeit. They in no way, their ancestors never lived in the Israel, or they were now Palestinians. So for all these reasons, that's why but all three of my ads so far hit that, because I believe these people, and again, quite frankly, Daryl Smith is the one who I heard say it. They have names and addresses. They should be afraid of us. We shouldn't be afraid of them. So I'm going for the people.
All right, we've got our break coming. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Thank you.
Okay.
You're listening to RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is the show Expansion. I'm Sophia, your host, and I'm interviewing Jim Condit Jr., congressional candidate and creator of rather hard-hitting, I would even say this would be upsetting to some people, you know, to hear that we are overtaken by a cabal that's so small. I think that people think that Jews or Jewish people, as it's the proper way to say it now, you aren't supposed to call anybody a Jew. You're supposed to make it softer. That they are in high levels because of hard work. I had a critical letter written to me because I had, John Kaminsky, that was the guest that I had. And this person told me that it's not questionable at all, because Jewish people study hard and therefore they get promoted and they're ambitious and they've attained the highest levels of office and control in this country for those reasons. And I think it's hard for the average American to put that together, that people are at high levels in this country not just because they study hard. Are you there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm listening to you, yeah.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting for comment from you.
Oh, you wanted me? Well, yeah. The certainly these folks that are running the country. And let me just, before I get into that, finish my tirade. Of course, the Congress. Most of the congressmen should also be arrested for what.
Yeah, but you said at the beginning of this show that the courts are so corrupt, the judges are corrupt. So we cannot, if we arrest these people, I am assuming arrest means by some kind of law enforcement, and I'm sure there's horrible corruption at the top levels of law enforcement that's tied together with the corruption in the courts and the corruption in these levels of office.
Yeah. Well, I'm leaving it for a little bit of some creative imagination, because I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. I'm just saying, when the criminals are running most of your country, courts, federal government, Congress, White House, you're either going to, your country is going to go down in a horrible slavery with sufferings of millions of people, or the people are going to find a way to deal with the criminals and get them out of positions of power. And I'm just getting the discussion going here. I can't say how it'll play out. You're bringing up a real problem. That is, you arrest somebody and then the judge lets them off, you know, or you arrest somebody for nothing, like Jim Traficant or Ernst Zundel or Gemma Rudolph. And of course, they were taken out of the country, but the judges they got were just more crooked probably than the ones here in some ways. And so then the judge crooks the trial. So I know this is what happened in 1917 in Russia. They killed as many of the intelligentsia as they could, the communists, when they took over. And the people, the Russian people, it's like if the parents came in, if someone came into the house of 3, 4, or 5 kids, killed their parents and said, now we're your parents, and treated them horribly. And the little kids would be wondering, where are our parents? Where are they? Why aren't they here to help us? That's what happened to the Russian people. That's what's happening to America right now, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows that we're watching these horrifying anti-Christ, anti-American Jews and their allies and the Freemasons, primarily in the top. I don't mean your grassroots level, but your top-level secret society people like Bush and Clinton. They are doing things against the will of 200 to 1, the American people were against this bailout of these crooks in D.C., and it's happening right now, but they don't have gun control yet, and we better not let them get gun control, or millions of us will die, and it could happen in other ways, too.
We are at our top of the hour break, and this is a very short one, so we'll be back with Jim.